And a good Friday, everybody. Welcome in to the DDC. 1025-1063 The Game. Chase McKay, Willie Donick with you today. Darren McFarland with the day off. He'll be back on Tuesday. Nick Keyser behind the glass. Willie D, how we doing?
Hello, Chase. Happy Canada Day to you.
Yes, happy Canada Day for those of our friends up north. As we'll celebrate July 4th on Monday, Canada Day today. So it's also Bobby Bonilla Day. So happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
Oh, yes. Good old Bobby. Collects a nice, nice little check today. He gets some green, as he will every July 1st for the next
13. I think it's 13 years. He has.
Is it only? Are we down to 13? Yeah. I thought maybe single digits by now, but nope. Still good ways. It's, well done by Bobby. I remember my first Canada Day, though, Chase. I had no idea. I was playing for the Medicine Hat Blue Jays, and I didn't realize that they had Canada Day. And we get out there, and it was all this big ceremony. I was like, what's going on? And so I didn't learn about Canada Day until I was out of college. So if you watch the Blue Jays play today, they're probably wearing red uniforms in honor of Canada.
I like that. That's cool.
I think they're up there. I think Caleb Joseph, our buddy, is actually on the call for this series, either in the booth or in the studio for Sportsnet. He's continuing to, and I think he's gonna be well on his way to be an outstanding Major League Baseball broadcaster. He's been joined up and doing some series with the Blue Jays, who are a very good team. And so he's up there. They're playing the Rays this week.
Very, very cool. Yeah, I think we all knew that Caleb would have a future in this.
Yep.
When you guys started interviewing him all those years ago. But good for him, and happy to see him starting his next career, which is cool.
Yeah.
So last
the Braves
night,
finally lost, Chase. Thank you to the Phillies for the Mets lead has had some shrinkage, man. It's like George Costanza in the pool in the Seinfeld episode.
It's shrinkage.
I was in the pool.
And now the Braves will head to Cincinnati and open up a series against the Reds starting tonight.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, look, it's been a good June, so I'm not going to complain too much. But yeah, 14-4, the Phillies just throttling the Braves last night. So it is what it is.
The Phillies on a given night, they can hit. I mean, they can explode, and they did. Ian Anderson has been a little bit of the weak link right now for the Braves. They've had pretty good pitching. I mean, obviously, you go 21 wins in a month, you're getting really good pitching. But he's been a little less than himself, don't you think, for most of the season?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely can see some guys taking a turn, you know, into the second half of the season and turning it on. They're going to need that. Now, you've obviously had some guys that have been playing well as of late. I mean, Adam Duvall, one of them. I think Dansby's had a really good season. But, you know, they're going to need more out of pitching. That's for sure.
Yeah, Dansby is going to be an interesting one. We mentioned this yesterday, but he happens to have the same agent or agency that represents Freddie Freeman, or did represent Freddie Freeman. Of course, that's the story this week, that he's going to change agents after all of the drama that went on, and then a report that came out the other day that the agent did not even allow Freddie Freeman to have knowledge of the Braves' final offer. He just sort of let it lie, and then the Braves pivoted and went to make the deal for Matt Olson, which effectively ended negotiations. So all kinds of drama there. But Dansby Swanson's having an all-star season for the Braves, and he is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah. I'm not going to make any predictions anymore about Braves re-signing.
You're not going to go out on that limb?
No, not going to do it. If Darren was here, he'd laugh and, you know, would agree with that. But I did that with Freddie Freeman because that just made absolute, you know, the most sense that he would end up re-signing, and he didn't. So who knows what's going to happen.
He's a good shortstops defensively that can hit some, are hard to find. And I'm sure people will always say, well, he was the first pick in the draft. If you look at the first pick in the drafts every year for the last 30, 40 years, you know, the draft started in 1965. I think you'll find there's a lot of guys on that list that never turn into anything. There's some famous or infamous people that never made it to the big leagues, and some other guys you're like, man, that guy was the first pick in the draft. So while Dansby Swanson maybe not a superstar, he's a solid player that's going to be playing this game a long, long time. I think he probably deserves to make the All-Star team, and he's going to get himself a really nice contract with somebody, and I think it will be the Braves. I mean, that's where I would think he wants to stay. He grew up in that area. So we'll see how it plays out. I did want to mention, too, I'm down in Birmingham, Chase, for this travel tournament that we're playing in, the Knights 16U Platinum team. We got to play at this real historic park yesterday, Rickwood Field in Birmingham. And I didn't know much about it until I went there. They have a little museum. It's unbelievable, the history that you see when you walk in. It's a great old park. It's been open since 1910. They've done some things, you know, with chair back seats and some things to keep it up. You know, the field's still in pretty good shape. They filmed the movie 42. But a guy, yeah, a representative from the park came up to our team yesterday. We lost the game. We played against a really, really talented team full of Division I commitments from Florida. But we played well for most of the game. But a guy came up and he said 181 Hall of Famers have played at Rickwood Field.
That's
181.
Cool.
Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, all on down the line. 181 Hall of Famers. That is really something.
That what a stat. That's awesome.
How about that stat? That is big time. So that was pretty cool to be able to say you played at that park. Rickwood Field in Birmingham. If you're ever down here, I'm sure a lot of people have been down here many times and didn't even know about it. It's just off the highway when you come through. It is worth stopping by and just taking a look. It's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. Well, cool. I'm glad you're enjoying that experience, and Mahoney's enjoying that as well. That's neat.
Yeah.
The Predators made a little move yesterday, trading Matthew Olivier to Columbus, and acquired a fourth-round pick that was originally Toronto's in this upcoming draft next week. So, an interesting move, but not super surprising, because I think with Tanner Janot coming on like he did, there just wasn't really a spot for Matthew Olivier, and he played, you know, some for the Predators this year, but it wasn't like it was, you know, last year with the formation of the Herd, which he was originally a part of.
But he's an original herdsman.
He is an original herdsman.
Will be.
And a good guy. I mean, I really like Matthew Olivier and wish him nothing but the best. But David Poile making some moves and acquiring some draft capital.
I don't know about you, Chase. I was pleasantly surprised that they got a fourth round pick for Matthew Olivier, who basically last year was an odd man out. Now, what people may not have realized last year is he had a pretty significant hip injury that kept him off the radar for a couple of months. And by the time he got back, he was sort of playing catch up. So I do think Matthew Olivier, fully healthy, will be a nice addition for Columbus, especially if they're looking for a little protection, shall we say, for a very young roster. They've got some very, very good young prospects that they're hoping will collectively get better over time. And so it helps to have somebody who can protect them. But Matthew Olivier for the Predators, when you started looking at the emergence of Michael McCarron, who's got maybe a little bit more to offer in terms of skill. He's a center. He can win faceoffs. He also can drop the gloves. Now, Matthew Olivier arguably might have been the best fighter straight up, yeah, of any of them. But if you want to have McCarron in your lineup, plus obviously you're going to have Tanner Janot and Yakov Trenin in there, having Olivier there was a little bit of a luxury. And I think you're trying to clear up not just, you know, Olivier didn't make a whole lot of money, but you're clearing up a roster spot to hopefully make the addition or two that you're looking for. Have a little bit more roster flexibility, and you get back a fourth round pick, and who knows? I mean, maybe that's the volume of picks is what you're looking for, right? The more picks you have, in the first through the fourth round, the fifth round, you might end up with a player down the road because of it.
Yeah, and the roster, you know, the roster spots, that is interesting because, you know, Cody Glass re-signed, so you figure that even though it's a two-way contract, they're going to want him to figure into their plans this year.
It'd be nice.
And I mean, I think that is the hope, that he is a part of this team at a training camp. But, you know, I think it's also, what are some of the other moves that they're going to make? You know, I definitely don't believe they're done trading. You know, whether Forsberg gets re-signed or not, which, you know, we talked to Elliot yesterday. Elliot seemed optimistic that it would get done based upon people that he's talked to, that, you know, teams telling him that they felt that Forsberg would re-sign with the Predators. It would be 8 years, about eight and a half, somewhere in there. TSN's Darren Dreger, though, has reported that the sides are, you know, still far apart. There's still a gap with things. So, I mean, again, this is what you hear this time of year. It's just, it's got to play out. I'm starting to feel more and more like it is going to get done. And then the next move is going to be David Poile making trades and potential free agent signings to make this roster better.
Yeah, we're going to throw out a number of different things that are on the horizon here. There's been some really interesting proposals put out there. There's the unrestricted market. There's the restricted free agent market, where we saw the Kevin Fiala deal born out of. There's straight up trades, people that might be on the trading block based on salary cap limitations for some of the teams. But, you know, yesterday was interesting because we had Elliot on. He had been giving that nugget of information out on the other show that he was a part of yesterday, Jeff Merrick's radio show up in Canada. And so he went into a lot of detail with us on his optimism around the league from the people he's talked to. He thinks the consensus in it will get done. Dreger less optimistic, but I think when you put the two together, it still makes sense. I think both of them have accurate information. The two sides are still not where they need to be, but I think the sense is, I think Elliot put it well. We'll play the clip a little bit later, but basically Elliot was like, either nothing is happening and it looks dead, or you get a vibe that things will get done eventually. Because if you're another GM and you really want to dive in there and be ready to make a move, you want to feel like your time is worthwhile. And I think the consensus of people telling Elliot is, you know, I'm not really going to go there because I think eventually he's going to sign back with Nashville. I thought that was valuable info.
Yeah, I did too. So we'll play that a little bit later. But coming up next, we're going to talk to Robbie Stanley, one half of Robbie and Rex Road. We'll get his thoughts on the Olivier trade, the Forsberg situation, and everything looming for the Nashville Predators as you listen to the DDC here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Little Dr. Feelgood bringing us back. Great show last night at Nissan Stadium with Motley Crue. Unfortunately, Poison couldn't play, but Def Leppard, Joan Jett. Back here on the DDC, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Willie Donick with you. And let's say hello to Robbie Stanley, one half of Robbie and Rex Road, mornings from 6 to 10 here on The Game. And Rob, David Poile already making some moves. He's had a couple of re-signings, but yesterday makes the move to trade Matthew Olivier to Columbus and gets a fourth-round pick. How surprised were you by the compensation that he got back for Olivier?
I thought it was a really good return. I did. I thought it was a good move from the Predators. It just makes sense from a roster construction standpoint. I mean, if you've already got Tanner Janot, you've already got Jakob Trenin, you had Michael McCarron fill in nicely last year. It just didn't really seem like an ideal, you know, usage of the lineup was having all three of those guys in there plus Matthew Olivier. So honestly, I was kind of blown away that they got a fourth round pick back for Matthew Olivier, but I think it's good for both sides. It's good return for the Predators. I think Olivier is going to have an opportunity to really kind of establish a role for himself at the NHL level with Columbus. So I think it's a win-win for both sides. And I think if you're the Predators and David Poile, you're pretty happy with the fourth-round pick back for Matthew Olivier.
So I have been saying for a while, and I think you agree with me. I think I've heard you say it too. I feel like Dylan David is about to return. I feel like he's got a big move in him this offseason. The question is, does it happen next week at the draft, or could we potentially see it before or just after, like we, you know, have seen in the past from him?
Yeah, I agree, and I think the draft is a really interesting night for the Predators, and we're less than a week away from that, coming up next Thursday on July the 7th, and we've seen things either happen and come to fruition at the draft, or we've seen the groundwork laid for these kind of things at the draft, too. I mean, James Neal got traded for Patrick Hornquist at the draft for the Predators. Kind of the beginning stages of the PK Subban and Shea Weber trade got laid at the draft. So it's traditionally a place where, number one, David Poile's not afraid to have conversations like that. And number two, there have been some trades that have happened there for the Predators at the draft. So that's why I wonder, and I don't think it's as simple as you have to know one way or the other, but I think in a perfect world, if you're the Predators, you would really like to have Philip Forsberg one way or the other figured out by draft night, because yeah. I think a lot of things can happen that way, and I think that, you know, it gives you some flexibility if you've got a resolution on the Forsberg situation one way or the other for you to really be aggressive come draft night. So I think that would be an ideal scenario for the Predators. We'll see whether or not it happens at this point based on today being July 1st, and that would be 6 days from now, things coming together pretty quickly with Forsberg. But I agree. Like, I think attention to the Forsberg contract one way or the other.
Willie?
Robbie, there's been so much that's gone on here. The Kevin Fiala trade really intrigued me, and it got me thinking about restricted free agents. And let's, for the moment, go with plan A, that Forsberg is back, and you still have some cap space to attack the rest of the roster. I saw the Fiala trade for a first-rounder and I would say a decent prospect, not a superstar kind of prospect. You never know. But do you think that's the way that David Poile could look at this? There's a good article in The Athletic with your colleague Joe Rexroad aboard there, and they did our man Dom Lucision, right, who's a big analytics guy. He did a long report on some restricted free agents and what it might be worth to sign somebody to an offer sheet, or if you didn't sign him an offer sheet, you could still try to work a trade like L.A. did with Fiala. Do you like that idea in principle?
I really do, because, Willie, I like the free agent class in terms of the unrestricted free agent. Like, I think there are some good names out there. Also, when you get to free agency, you're dealing with older players at that point, right? So you've got Forsberg, who's 27. He's right in the prime of his career. There are other guys like that that are 27, 28, 29 years old. But, you know, you've got guys like Nazem Kadri out there that are 31, will be 32 coming up in the fall. And there are teams talking about, you know, rumors of him getting a seven-year deal. Like, I'm not giving Nazem Kadri a seven-year deal at the age of 32.
Way.
So, you know, as a restricted free agent, you know, you're typically dealing with younger guys that maybe are not quite as proven at that point, but you can get cheaper and that you could potentially have around your team longer. So I think probably in a perfect world, that's what David Poile would rather do, is be a trade, maybe go after somebody like that. David Poile has not typically been someone who spends a whole lot of time, you know, really wading into the waters of unrestricted free agency. You know, they got Matt Duchene a couple of years ago. Other than that, they really traditionally haven't been huge players in getting into those markets on unrestricted free agents on the first day of free agency. So I think if David Poile had his druthers, that's probably the way he would rather go about doing things.
And I think we've seen David Poile and listened to him long enough to know that he probably does not like doing the offer sheet thing. He certainly didn't like being on the other end of it when Shea Weber signed the one with the Flyers. So I would think if you're going to do it, you would probably propose a trade rather than try to make the move of signing a guy to the offer sheet. But it was interesting to sort of take a look at the chart. For example, if you offer a guy, I think the threshold is something like $10 million per year. It would cost you 4 first-round picks straight up to make that deal. But, you know, there's like $6 million is a first and a third or something like that. If you take a look at it, the argument that Dom Lucision makes as the analytics guy is it a player of that caliber, like a Matthew Tkachuk or maybe a Pierre-Luc Dubois, somebody like that, is well worth the compensation? He said that Tkachuk was well worth 4 first-round picks. Now that's, and of course, a salary of about $10 or $11 million a year. I that's an interesting debate to have, but very, very eye-opening when you take a look at it.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, Tkachuk, I think I would probably agree, is probably worth that because he's kind of that, in today's NHL, that perfect balance of a player that just drives you absolutely nuts and plays on the line, in some cases over the line, but is also incredibly gifted offensively. Like, he's, to me, almost the perfect power forward in today's NHL. So I would agree with the Tkachuk part of this. Willie, the Dubois situation is really interesting to me. Because he's not an unrestricted free agent until, I believe, 2024. And he's basically already told the Jets, hey, guys, just so you know, in a couple of years, I'm not coming back. Like, I will be an unrestricted free agent. So I'm really interested to see how that part of it plays out. Because, like, if you're the Jets, I would assume you want to get some compensation back for him, you know, and capitalize on that as much as you can. So the offer sheet part of it is interesting. Traditionally, not only just David Poile, but most general managers in the league, they don't like to do that because they hate to imagine what life would be like on the other side of that. I mean, I think Aho was an example recently of Carolina kind of stepping up to the table and matching it from Montreal there. But it's really interesting to see how that really hasn't been a factor in the NHL over the last few years. I am interested with the cap being what it is and with salary cap positioning just being such a luxury in today's NHL, whether or not somebody tries to go that route this offseason, because it's not something we typically see.
Yeah, and I think that cap number, by most people's accounts, people feel like the cap will go up in a couple of years. It may not go up a lot next year, but the league just announced highest revenues ever, right, as a league. That's a really good sign, but the players are still playing catch-up with the escrow and things like that, so it may be another year. But someday, you are going to get more space to put another big salary or two in there. But so I think that illustrates that now might be the time to use the flexibility that the Predators have, not spending the cap last year and having some space, trying to take advantage of teams that have to get by who are right up against it for the next couple of years. So with that in mind, Robbie, would you shop the first round pick? If you're David Poile, would you be willing to trade your first round pick on draft day if it made an immediate impact on the roster?
100%. I absolutely would be willing to do that. You know, I think they've done a pretty decent job of kind of restocking the cupboard. You know, for years, Willie, you know, back in 16, 17, 18, when they were going for it, their cupboard was pretty bare. I mean, they didn't have a whole lot of prospects that you felt good about moving forward. And maybe they don't have that top-level guy right now. We'll see. I mean, Luke Evangelista, I thought, was sensational last year. They had a couple of first-round picks from a year ago, LaRue, that I'm really interested to see, you know, kind of how that part of it plays out. But I think that for the most part, they've done a really good job of restocking the cupboard. If I'm the Predators, I'm absolutely open to dealing that first-round pick and getting some immediate help. Like, to me, and I know we've talked about this a couple of times, like, you've got Roman Josi in the prime of his career right now. If you re-sign Forsberg, you've got him in the prime of his career. Johansson, Duchesne, like, the list goes on and on. I'm not saying that you need to just totally go for it and be reckless, but I do think there's a window here with your current core that you want to try to capitalize on if you can, if you're David Poile. So I'm totally open, if I'm the Predators, to using my first round pick this year, maybe as a negotiating chip or a trade piece to bring in somebody that can help you immediately.
Robbie,
I know Chase has got one more here for you, Robbie. Let me sneak one more in, a quick one. What are your realistic expectations for Cody Glass next year?
My expectations for him to make the team out of camp and to stick. I think he had a really good year in Milwaukee. I think he's shown that he is above an AHL-level player. But, you know, Willie, we see this sometimes where you run into those tweener situations. Like, a guy like Cal O'Reilly comes to mind going way back where he just lit it up in the American Hockey League. And he got to the NHL level, and it just wasn't quite there. I still wonder, as I look at this roster, like, where exactly is the opportunity for him? If Granlund's your first or second-line center and Johansson's your other center in this equation, Like, how exactly does Cody Glass fit in there and you feel good about the herd line? Like, I still think the roster is a bit of a weird situation for him because I don't think playing him at fourth line on the center position really does a whole lot of good. And I think we saw that toward the end of the last year. So I think he's going to make the team. I think they may have to experiment either moving somebody else away from center or experiment playing him on the wing and seeing what that looks like. But he's a guy where you can see the talent is there. The ability is there. Now, can he put it together at the NHL level? Because so far in his career, not only just with the Predators, but with Vegas as well, it's basically been trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And some of that's been his fault. Some of it has been the situation that he's found himself in. But he needs to be a guy that makes the team out of camp next year. Otherwise, I've got real questions as to what he's going to be as they move forward.
All right, Robbie, real quick. I said yesterday that I believe that either Luke Kunin or Elli Tolvanen, one of them will not be on the team next year. Okay. Do you agree with that? Or could you see a scenario where they're both gone or they're both back?
If I had to guess, I would lean that they're both back. And the only reason I say that is because I just don't really know what the trade value is for either one of them. Now, having said that, like we've gotten a lot of people text in to us talking about trading Elli Tolvanen. I don't think his value is high, but I will say this, like Tolvanen could be the type of trade piece that in the construction of a bigger deal, if you're throwing in Elli Tolvanen along with it, maybe that's the way that it goes about, you know, maybe being a part of a trade package. But like on the surface itself, like I don't think that either one of them have trade value that's all that high at the moment. So because of that, my guess is both of them are back on the roster next year. Hopefully neither one of them starting off the year in a top six role.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Robbie, great stuff as always. Have a great 4th of July weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate the time.
Robbie Stanley, one half of Robbie and Rex Road. You can hear him morning 6 to 10 on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Another NHL coach has been shown the door. We will tell you about that coming up next. And also, I want to hit on a few things that he was just talking about when it comes to Tolvanen and Kunin. And we'll do that coming up next as you listen to the DDC, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Thank you, Gary. Back here on the DDC, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Nick Kieser here with you on a Friday. Happy Canada Day. The San Jose Sharks have made a coaching move, basically fired their whole coaching staff, including Bob Bugner, the former Predator. As he now, that's two jobs, I think, because he had Florida and then San Jose, but decided to go in a different direction. Kind of late in the game to be making coaching changes, don't you think, Willie?
Yeah, and remember, they've been, I don't even know, have they hired a new GM yet? They've been looking for a GM for a long, long time. I'm not sure they've even gotten that yet, but it is not a good summer for the original Preds, man. Bob Bugner and Andrew Brunette, man, those are two of the originals right there, the boogeyman. So Bob Bugner is a good hockey man, and he will land on his feet somewhere. I don't know if it'll be as a head coach right away, probably not at this stage of the game, but I think people really like him a lot, and he's done a good job. He's one of those coaches that seems to draw teams that are in flux. You know, they haven't really had their ducks in a row. That's a youth movement. They are turning the roster over out in San Jose, and they've got a ways to go as they rebuild after being a very consistent team franchise for a long, long time.
Yeah, and so you had San Jose. Detroit has filled their position with LaLonde. How do you say his name? He was the assistant.
I don't know how you say his name, honestly. They kind of promoted from the up-and-coming list rather than go with the old standbys.
Well, he had been an assistant with Tampa.
And the guy that I was hoping off of that staff that would get that job was Jeff Halpern, who, as I mentioned before, he's got a family tie here. His sister lives here. Jenny, who's married, she and her husband, David Moore. David Moore was a doctor for the Predators at one point and a doctor for the Titans working under Burton Elrod for a long time. So they certainly are keeping tabs on that one. They were hoping that Jeff might get his first head coaching job. He grew up in D.C., played hockey for a long, long time, and has been a right-hand man for John Cooper. But you knew that with that family tree, John Cooper, the Tampa thing, you know, it was just a matter of time before some of those assistants got head jobs.
Yeah, and it looks like the Jets are targeting Rick Tocchet, which I think would be a good hire. I mean, I figured Rick Tocchet was going to get another crack at it. You know, he did a fine job on TNT, but I think he belongs on a bench somewhere.
Yeah, and so if he takes the Jets, Chase, that leaves the question. Anybody on the top of your mind that would be an interesting former coach to be on the TNT panel? Barry Trotz?
Yeah. Well,
I wonder if that would be something like he would be the name, right? Do you think he could jump in there and do the job, like with a little polishing, a little training?
I think he'd be great at it, but I'll do you one better.
Who do you want to see?
Well, no, because you know your broadcast needs to replace a former coach that has retired. I'm just saying, you know, maybe Trotsky could hang out with you guys. I would love that.
Look, Barry could do pretty much whatever he wants to do. I think
he will.
He turned down some jobs as the coach, so I don't know what the next move is. I mean, he could just sort of recharge the batteries and do nothing if he wanted to, because the Islanders are paying the freight. He's going to get paid handsomely by the Islanders in the meantime. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of other personalities. Let's just put Barry aside. In, you know, who would join a broadcast on TNT to help keep that show spicy? Like, I think that show's got potential. And if you could add to the mix a really good personality, that would only help. Because I thought Tocchet was a little bit underrated. I thought he was good.
Sort
of monotone. But if you really listen to him, he had some good, strong opinions. I thought mixed well. I was comfortable with Gretzky and those guys.
And I liked it when he was with Gretzky because you could tell the relationship that they had.
Yeah, they go way back.
They go way back. And so I thought he did a really good job, along with Paul Bissonnette, pulling a little more personality out of Gretzky. Because Gretzky was pretty stiff when he first started. And I think as the year went on, they were able to pull a little personality out of him and got him to actually be the great one.
I agree, and so I think that's an important role for that show, and I do think it's probably best filled by an ex-coach, and there are a lot of guys that are probably out there for the taking in this musical chairs, so that's something I'm sure they're keeping close tabs on if Tocchet officially does take the job of the Jets. Also, I would recommend to Tanner Janot that now that he's coaching in the division, he might get a little more familiar. Remember, there was a funny interview on TNT with Tanner Janot where he had to admit he was unaware of Rick Tocchet's playing career, where they sort of compared. Anson Carter compared his style of play with Tanner Janot. Rick Tocchet was a tough, hard-nosed player who could score a little bit. And so, like, hey, kind of reminds me of Rick Tocchet. Hey, Tanner, have you heard of Rick Tocchet? And he's like, no. The whole panel just lost it, right? Bissonnette had a field day with that one.
Have the Bruins filled their job yet?
Yes. They have gone with Jim Montgomery.
The
coach, just to remind people who that is, he was coaching the Dallas Stars. He has a hockey college background. Got the job with the Stars and had to step down because he had, I think he was pretty upfront with it. He had a drinking problem, and he had to go get some help. He's worked his way back up, and the Bruins went with him. The Bruins like those guys that have college hockey ties. It's such a heavy hotbed of college hockey. So Montgomery gets a crack at it with the Bruins.
Could Dave Tippett be who you're talking about as a potential TV guy?
I've never seen he has not, to me, looked like a TV guy. But he is a very sharp-witted guy. I think, you know, you want a personality.
Yeah.
Like, it really helps if a guy has some flavor to him when he gets on the air. So, to me, he's not a natural. Like, Terry Crisp is the ultimate, right? If you're looking for a Terry Crisp who just energizes the broadcast. You know, that's what we always love about Crispy. He just adds energy and life and enthusiasm to a broadcast. So I'd love to have a guy like that. But Tockett wasn't that, right? Tockett was more of a dry sense of humor, but also rugged, would give you that old school, hey, here's what I see as a coach, as a former player. You know, he was no holes barred, right? He just wasn't as charismatic as maybe you're looking for.
So real quick, you know, who in your mind fits San Jose? I mean, that's kind of a mess to go to. I mean, they are, you know, obviously not very good right now. And so there is, and that's putting it, putting it mildly, but they got a ton of draft capital going into the draft. So we'll see what they do with that. They have about $13 million in cap space. So they could, you know, do some things, but you know, Barry Trotz has made it pretty clear. He's not coaching this year. I don't know about, you know, Mike Babcock is out there as, you know, potentially coming back at some point. What do you think? I mean, who makes sense for that, or is that going to be an up-and-comer?
I'm just trying to think of some other guys. I mean, Jeff Halpern comes to mind. If he was very close, and I'm told he was, you know, he got a pretty good look by the Red Wings. San Jose is the same kind of situation as the Red Wings. They've got some young players. They played a lot of rookies last year. I mean, flat out score your first goal in the league kind of stuff last year. They're also kind of waiting out the clock on Mark Edward Vlasic and Brent Burns and Eric Carlson, aging guys that make a ton of money. So that's a difficult transition. So you might want a young coach who can kind of bring along the young players and really set the culture. So I don't think that's a job that, let's just say, the Barry Trotz type, right? A veteran coach that's looking to jump back in there and help a team win. I think this is more of an environment for a young up-and-coming coach.
Yeah, and I tell you what, a young up-and-coming coach that I think is going to get a shot sooner rather than later, and I hate it because I don't want to lose him, but Dan Hynote, I believe, gets a job at some point. Probably won't be this year.
I think someday he would be a really good head coach someday.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we'll break down more of the Forsberg stuff and some of the moves that the Predators are going to make coming up next as you listen to the DDC, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Welcome back to the DDC. Presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York certified comfort expert company. Schedule now at springhillac.com. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you. And Willie, I got NHL Network on right now. And, you know, as we relate this to the Preds and the moves that they're going to make, the Lightning and Ryan McDonagh are working to try and find a trade partner. That's kind of interesting, a core piece that he's been there for a while through obviously their two cup runs and tried to go for three this year.
Ryan McDonagh is, man, a solid, solid guy and has been for a long, long time. That's really intriguing. I saw Elliot put that out a couple days ago. So what's the book on McDonagh? So he is a left-hand shot. He is 33, got a lot of mileage on him, right? He has been a hard-nosed guy in the league for 12 full years. What's he got left in the tank? It's a good question. Is he still a top pair guy? He's certainly been a winner. If you could get him cheap, I mean, I guess what a Predator fan would ask is he a guy you could play in your top four?
And that's what they would
for
need
for a short term.
What's his
contract? I haven't.
Hang on, I can pull it up. But one thing I was going to say about it is we've focused a lot on the forwards, whether it's Forsberg or trading for a second line player or something like that. They do need to address the defense. I mean, in a perfect world, I would love for them to either sign or acquire a top four defenseman, because and I don't mean that as a slight towards Fabro or Carrier, but it takes a little pressure off too, that you can add into the top four, and then you're taking some pressure off of them. I mean, that's the big thing. He's making He's got 4 years left on the deal.
Yeah. So now that's a problem.
Making 6.7. Yeah.
Now,
no.
Now
no,
here's,
no.
But here is how you maybe could work with the Tampa Bay club there. Now the term is a problem because he's already 33 and you're stuck with him for 4 years. The last 2 years of that, I don't know. But if they took half of that and you're paying 3.3 or whatever that is,
because
honestly, they're going to be in a cap crunch. The Lightning, they have to get rid of that contract. And so it would cost you almost nothing in return. You know, you probably wouldn't have to trade them a draft pick.
Right.
You'd basically be just taking the contract off their hands. If they took half of it, then maybe it would cost you something going back the other way. I don't know, but I agree with you that the Predators have to be looking around to find somebody who could be the right mix in the top four. First pair or second pair, I think it balances out. They have said, you know, they'd like to get a little bigger. We had a really good conversation with John Hines on 615 Day. I thought he, on that interview, laid out exactly what they would like to have. If you look at Alex Carrier and Dante Fabbro, those guys are good, solid defensemen that played all year in the top four, but neither of them quite have the size. Ideally, you'd like to add that element, I think, in your top four. Maybe somebody who's been through the battles like McDonough. So I'm going to say, no, he's not a fit for the Predators. And I am really curious who could take that contract. That's too much money to spend. 6.7 for McDonough, as great as he is, for 4 years, no way.
Yeah.
No way. The Tampa Bay's got to pick up a lot of the tab on that if they're going to get rid of him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But I'm just curious of where you're going to address defense.
Yeah,
because that's what's going to happen.
You got to be looking around.
And you know, I'm sitting here saying that I think David's going to make a big move. Well, obviously he's got to send something back to make that big move. And to me, some of the best trade capital that he has, it comes from the defense. So, you know, how are you going to replace that? So let's just, you know, say he decides to trade Dante Fabbro, even though he doesn't necessarily want to, but he does it because you got to give up something to get something big in return. And he's a part of a trade package. What does that, you know, then what does that mean? Because you've now hurt the defense even more. And how are you going to replace that? Now, Jeremy Davies, at this point, you got to figure out what you got in him. Is he an AHL defenseman or is he an NHL defenseman? It's just been a numbers game because we heard John Hines say that last year that he was an NHL defenseman playing in the AHL because of the numbers. And he had a cup of coffee up here. But, you know, David Ferentz is another one that is coming up through the ranks and has been developing.
Right. And you have to, and he has to be signed. Ferentz and Davies are both players that have to be signed to new deals. And so I would not be surprised because once you get there, it's hard. Ferentz is different because he hasn't been a pro as long. So I think Ferentz can still freely go up and down to Milwaukee. So I think that one's a no-brainer. Davies, I'd have to check. But he's getting to the age where you can't just send him up and down to Milwaukee. I have to verify that. But it wouldn't surprise me if Davies ends up being a little bit like Olivier, into which you just clear the roster space. They've got some other young defense prospects that they like, and I think they'd like to see play in Milwaukee. So does Davies become a guy that you shop around and try to get something else for?
Yeah.
You're not going to get a lot, right? But somebody else might have a better opportunity for him. And you bring in a player either that plays a different position or you get a draft pick to where you can get an asset in a different way there.
Yeah.
But I agree with that. You know, Fabro's not going anywhere. Carrier's not going anywhere. Both of them give you great value for what they make. Neither one of them, the two of them combined make just over $2 million.
Sure.
Right? And they're playing very important roles. So you keep those guys on.
And they're young too.
And they're young. They're probably not done developing. So I think you're just trying to add the right veteran mix in there. It doesn't have to score a lot, right? He doesn't have to be a guy that runs the power play. You got that covered with Yossi. Yossi's going to play most of the power play time. Carrier can play it. You know, Ekholm can play it. I think Fabro can still help out on a power play. But you're looking for that rugged defensive defenseman, penalty killer, intimidator, who could play alongside Ekholm or Yossi. That's what I would be looking at.
So you wouldn't kick the tires on, even though I believe he's going to return to Pittsburgh, Chris Letang, even though he's older?
I don't think so. I don't think that's what you need, right? Letang is basically a Yossi. If you have Letang, you're looking at big minutes.
Right.
Big money for a short term. Not the defender necessarily that you're looking for. I think I'm looking for a different type of defenseman. If I'm going to put, I just don't think paying the resources for that is the right fit, as great a player as Letang is. And I do think at the end of the day, I'd be surprised if he's not a Penguin.
Yeah. No. Robbie did say this morning his called shot was he believes that Nazem Kadri replaces Vinny Malkin in Pittsburgh.
You know, Robbie said something about Kadri. I was reading this as well. Kadri, first of all, Kadri, look, as great of a story as he was, he goes on, I forget what the interview was. He was in a public setting. Maybe he was at the parade. He wore a t-shirt that said too many men on the ice. Like, what? Why? You know, what are you doing? He's definitely got a streak in him of arrogance, of nastiness, which is probably what makes him great. But he kind of showboated a little bit, this triumph that he had. But at 31, people are putting out a price tag of about $8 million a year for him.
I wouldn't pay that for him. I like him, but I wouldn't pay that.
Yeah. I mean, you certainly – and for how long? Is he going to get the full 7 years at age 31? I don't think that would be a good buy, especially if you're getting into that 7-8 range. So that's too rich for my blood, looking at that. But Pittsburgh's one to watch with Letang and Malkin, two guys, aging superstars who have so much history with that club. Do they re-up with the Penguins? I think Sidney Crosby would like to have them both. But is that really the smartest move for Pittsburgh? That's a really interesting, tough set of decisions there.
Neil on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com says Josh Manson is a fit, and I was kind of thinking that too.
Interesting. I do think he fits the profile, the type of guy you're looking for. Got a little toughness edge to him, size, and can skate a little bit. That's not a bad idea.
Coming up next, we're going to shift gears. The college football, college sports landscape changed a lot yesterday. We'll talk to Dan Wolkin of USA Today, get his thoughts on all of that as you listen to the DDC 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.